And we're talking with Dr. Simeon Hine about his work in resonance viewing and with crop circles, a scientific study of them, acknowledging about 80 to 90% of them are man-made, but it's that other 10%, which is fascinating. What could that be? And what is created even when humans are responsible for the crop circle? And Dr. Hine's been covering that for a while, and we've been enjoying that conversation. Lots of people want to jump in. You want to go right to the phones here, Dr. Hine? Let's get Kurt east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Kurt?
Hey, this is Kurt. I'm calling from Two Arbors, Minnesota.
Glad to have you. You're talking with Dr. Hine.
Hi, Dr. Hine.
Hi, Kurt.
I have a question for you regarding some circles that were talked about shortly before the initial attacks of 9/11, quite a bit on Coast to Coast, as a matter of fact. It turns out that they were a series of formations over in England, and I think, if I'm remembering right, they showed up in negative image, and then they later showed up in positive image, but they were also revealing a series of binary codes.
You're right, that's right, yeah.
Explain that, and thank you, Kurt. What is Kurt saying there, that there was one image that was in negative and then it showed up again in positive? Was that people that you knew that were taking credit for those?
Yeah, what Kurt is referring to are some patterns that appeared in Hampshire County. I believe there was something that was called the Arecibo response message, and then something that was called the face. And the technique that was used there was something like more like a type of imaging system that would be used to print newspaper images and kind of lots of series of dots and you know, dark spaces and light spaces, and it created really effective looking, really interesting looking images. And some people thought that they actually saw a code in that so-called Arecibo response message. The answer to the question is no, I don't know who did that. And, you know, there are always rumors around, but no, I don't have any direct knowledge of who or what made those formations. I don't think it's beyond people to do something like that. The farmer in one case did find a grid-like pattern the night before one of those showed up in his field, and then the next night it showed up. So it's possible that people were doing those, but I don't have any direct knowledge of those particular formations. But they certainly were a new way to make crop formations. They're not really crop circles because they're not in a circle, but it was a new type of system, and it certainly produces very good-looking results.
When you say a grid had shown up in the field the night before, meaning
right.
Evidence of somebody laying out the pattern?
Right. I mean, Colin Andrews spoke to the farmer down there.
Okay.
I believe it was by a radio telescope. And the farmer told him that one day he came out there and the whole field had been turned into a grid. And then the next night the patterns appeared. I think that would suggest that, you know, humans were involved in that.
Right.
But, you know, actually without being there and actually having more direct knowledge, I don't know anything more about those formations except that they really were rather startling looking. And they were a really new way to do it.
Let's go west of the Rockies where Awen is waiting for Dr. Simeon Hine.
Oh, good evening.
Hi.
Hello.
This is Awen from Roanoke Park. I have a question. Well, I have a comment first about the static electricity, and then I have a question. I'm really not surprised that you could measure static electricity, even a phenomenal amount in a small circle, with all that, you know, rubbing. You know, first of all, air is kind of an insulator, so I would presume it would kind of keep it in that specific area as much as the people that were working there, and I could see all this energy being spent stomping and sliding around, so you'd be probably creating a lot of friction and energy. I don't know if it's a phenomenal amount for the work that you did, so I'm really not surprised about that. But I do have a question, you know, in regards to the bent nodes and the other research that has been done.
Right.
And he had, traces of microwave residue or something like that, that kind of energy in some of his crop circles. And I was wondering if that was still true or...
Who are you referring to?
Levengood and Talbot.
Right, right. Yeah, that's right. My interpretation of the results is that it isn't being created by microwaves, or if it is, it's something to do with the shape of the circle creating an energy pattern, kind of like, if you're familiar with the idea of cymatic energy, the idea that shapes create infrasound. I think that might be a possibility that the shape itself is creating some very low frequency energy, But I do not believe that the circles are being created by microwaves, at least not most of them. I believe that's a misinterpretation of the evidence. Because, again, we found some of that activity in our own circles. I've seen some of those blackened and exploded nodes in other fields outside of crop circles. And even the results you're referring to, those researchers have found those types of nodes outside of the circles, too. So what I'm wondering is, where don't you find them? You know, if you find them in the circle and outside the circle, I mean, it's certainly possible an energy field came down and affected the circle and the whole field. But it's also possible that that type of activity, and I'm not trying to explain this phenomenon away, but I'm just suggesting the possibility that blown nodes and elongated nodes are just natural parts of fields, and you do find them in fields with circles and without circles.
Let's go to Bob, and then we'll go to a break, and we'll line up all of your calls on Coast to Coast AM, where Bob is waiting to talk with Dr. Simeon Hine. Bob?
Hi, this is Bob from New York. I wanted to know if Dr. Hine is familiar with a book called Unmasking the Enemy by Dr. Nelson Pacheco and Tommy Bland. Tommy Bland was a research associate for the UFO researcher, Dr. Hynek, and Dr. Pacheco was chairman of the math department at the U.S. Air Force Academy. Their contention is that crop circles and UFOs are demonic manifestations from another dimension. And I wanted to know what his feeling was on that.
Were you referring to Dr. J. Allen Hynek when you were talking?
Yes. The late Dr. J. Allen Hynek, one of his, it says here on page 425, that Tommy Bland was a research associate for Dr. Hynek, astronomer at Northwestern University.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And they mention the Andreessen affair, where this woman, she saw four beings walk through her kitchen door, and they asked her for knowledge tested by fire, and she gave them the family Bible, and then they produced other Bibles that were bigger than the one she had, sort of like casting doubt on the Bible. And later on, when they put her under hypnosis, she spoke in a unknown language. He also talks about a crop circle in England that formed an ancient Hebrew word that meant woman or Eve.
Isha.
And, I think it was Hesha.
Isha.
Page 256.
Yeah, it's Ha-Isha, the woman. Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, let's get the response.
Well,
to...
you know, to answer your question, I mean, no, I don't think there's anything demonic about crop circles. I mean, honestly, I think they're some of the most beautiful, amazing patterns I've ever seen, and I know millions of other people feel that way. And if anyone has that reaction to the phenomena overall, I think it's more kind of their own judgment of the phenomena rather than anything that's built into it. Now, having said that, there are some circles that you don't feel good when you've been in them.
That's very interesting.
Some of them make you feel really good, and some of them don't. And even people that have taken the water from the circles that didn't make them feel good, when they started drinking the water again, they got the same feeling, almost as if the crop formation had an imprint on the water. And I know that the researcher Lucy Pringle has done a lot of research on the impact of the crop formations, the homeopathic effect of the formations on water. But some of them really make you feel great, and a few occasionally just don't. And I don't know why exactly, but I think I don't see anything at all negative about the phenomenon. I mean, I think it's really empowered a lot of people, and I've just had a good experience around them, and I know a lot of other people have, but the UFO phenomenon is certainly a very important topic. I know the late Philip Colonel Corso made some reference to crop circles. I think he said that the NSA determined that back in the 60s, at least they thought they were being created by extraterrestrials. At least that's what he said in the day after Roswell. So
it's a perfect time then to stop and come back and find all the wild card lines full. And if there's not, we'll get an open line for you next to talk with Dr. Simeon Hine about his research into crop circles and the connection that he draws between them and resonance viewing. You'll find out more about all of these on his website, which you can link up to at coasttocoastam.com. This is Ian Punnett. We will make time to get everybody in for Dr. Simeon Hine here and his research on crop circles. And Joe is on the wild card line to talk to him on Coast to Coast AM. Joe?
Hi, and how are you?
Good. Jump in there.
Good. Dr. Hine, I had a question. You know, like in the United States, we have, I believe, water when it drains in a bathtub or in a drain, we have, it goes clockwise. And in Australia, it goes counterclockwise as it goes down the drain. My question is, in the crop circles, the stalks of wheat, is there a particular way they are rotated or they are bent down? Is it clockwise or counterclockwise? And is there a difference between there and, say, the United States and maybe London?
Yeah, no, Joe, that's a great question. Actually, it seems that most of the circles in England that I've seen go clockwise. For some reason, the circle makers like to do it that way, and maybe the other type as well form in that direction. And that's a really good question because we've often suspected that the flow of the radial lay of the wheat and the direction that it swirls in, you know, whether it's counterclockwise or clockwise, could affect the energy. It certainly affects it when you walk in the circle because, you know, if you walk against the flow of the circle, that feels really different than if you're walking in the direction that the wheat is laid down. So that's certainly an important variable to pay attention to. But I'm not sure exactly the percentages, but it's certainly something to watch.
Larry on the wild card line for Dr. Simeon Hine on Coast to Coast AM. Larry?
Hi, can you hear me good?
Perfectly.
I'm on a cell phone.
Don't move.
Okay, I'm holding still right now.
There you go.
I'm out doing my job. And anyway, when the doctor was talking, and you were talking actually because you talked about a little bit of, you kind of related spiritual.
Right.
You have some training in theology?
Yes, I do.
All right. Well, I sit under like an old country preacher, but he's self-taught in Hebrew. And I had a friend of mine once say to me, don't let my mind wander because it's too small. It might get lost.
Mm.
I always thought that was kind of funny. But I was thinking about nature. And I think in Romans it says the natural types of spiritual. And I thought about it in the Old Testament. It says, meditate on my word day and night. And that word meditate, if you go back to the roots of the word, ties in with the word ruminate. That's what a cow does when it chews the cud.
Sure.
And even Paul compared the resurrection of the dead to the glory as of the sun and moon and stars. And the word glory, if you go back to the roots of the word in the Hebrew, ties in with your thoughts. And it kind of blends itself well with what you're talking about. Because we don't necessarily understand everything and where energy comes from. But even the energy that's in our hearts, those nodes in our hearts, that's a form of energy. But we don't know the origin of life itself. And even like with our blood, it's so close to like plants, the DNA. And actually this pastor that I sit under, he teaches, he was big, heavy in computers. And he's saying the same multiplication process that takes place with the division of cells at birth is the same multiplication process that takes place with the binary language. And considering all of this, I mean, I don't know if you've necessarily heard all this capsulated, but there's four letters in the Hebrew alphabet. It's Yud, Hey, Vav, and they're weakest letters, but they form the mighty name of Jehovah. And they're actually in Jesus, too, Yeshua, plus there's one more letter. But I look at all these things, and it's just really interesting. And what you're saying, I know Paul used the statue of the unknown God to share kind of what I'm sharing in a sense, too, you know?
Okay, well, let's get some feedback on that, and thanks for taking time away from your job. And I would say everything great that happens in the Bible happens after a wandering. So there's all sorts of wanderings, and then something fabulous happens. So I would throw that out there, too. But where are you with all what it was?
Well, yeah, you know, Ian, we have to go into the unknown to find out more of our own abilities and who we really are. And I feel that, you know, what Larry's saying is true to the extent that we've really become disconnected from nature. And all the things we've been talking about tonight, you know, they're all natural. They're all there already. You don't even need machines to do it. We've become so connected to, you know, mechanical machines that we've lost a lot of our natural intuitive power, our natural intuitive abilities. And so, yeah, I think that this is what it's all about, connecting to nature, to our own inner nature, whether it's through wheat or it's through resonance. It's just tapping into those powers again. It's time for us to remember what we can do, what we're capable of doing, and to use those powers in a productive, positive way to improve our planet, to improve our lot on the earth, because we can do a lot better than we're doing right now. And the reason we're not doing better is because we're not really who we are. We're suppressing who we are. We're suppressing our natural innate abilities.
Let's go, Jim, wildcard line for Dr. Simeon Hine on Coast to Coast AM. Jim?
Yeah.
You have a question?
Pleasure to speak. Yeah, I do. Great to speak with both of you guys.
Thank you.
reverting back to the subject of remote viewing, if we, and by we I mean the government and these various organizations such as your own, who practice or teach this on a daily basis, if we have this down to such an art, why haven't we found Osama bin Laden yet?
Well, that question, you know, comes up all the time. And I can only suspect that, A, either they're not using these viewers right now. Most of these viewers have said there is no longer any military viewing project. Nonetheless, a lot of people suspect that there may be a secret viewing project, but maybe it's convenient for some people not to find Osama, maybe for a variety of reasons.
Maybe they don't actually want to find him.
They don't want to find him. They want, you know, some political systems need enemies, you know. You know what I'm suggesting? And so maybe they don't want to find him. We don't know, but that's a possibility.
Easier to galvanize around an enemy.
That's right. Absolutely. It helps to have enemies if you're trying to generate support for your political regime.
Okay. Then can I offer to you that then I'm disappointed in remote viewers? Because it would seem like then they only remote view something like that if they're given some sort of governmental permission. Why couldn't they, why aren't you all resonating in there, finding out where he is, and at least bypassing, you know, going to the press and saying, here's where he is, we can tell you the name of the cave, we can tell you the region that he's in, and then therefore putting pressure on those that would otherwise withhold that information?
Well, you know, Ian, I've worked with situations like that back at the Farsa Institute and on my own occasionally, and I found often that the authorities are not very receptive to that type of information. They're just very suspicious of it, how you came up with information. If you're working in certain situations, you may actually even be considered a suspect if you know too much information. And maybe if you knew where Osama was, you might even be accused of being part of some Al-Qaeda network. Otherwise, how would you know? Do you see the
But you could do that on this show. But you could do that on this show. You could come
well,
on
I guess
air,
you could.
You could remote view, and you could say, this is where he is. And if you have email contact with, you know, troops on the ground in Afghanistan, let them know.
You know, if someone came to us and asked us to do that, we might consider it, but I think it's getting into a very complex area, and it's also possible that people move around where you located them yesterday. They might not be the next day, and
it's actually a
very complex issue. It would be,
but I would think it would be a challenge maybe, but I think that if there'd be enough remote viewers out there doing that, that could affect a change maybe in how much or how we looked at information like that. Well, I won't press any more on it, but thanks for going with me as much as you did. Let's go wildcard line where James is standing by for Dr. Simeon Hine.
Yeah, this is James in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
Glad to have
you. I was listening to Dr. Hine's explanation as to why an electrical charge would build up in a man-made crop circle. And I think I like my explanation for that electrical charge better. has to do with a couple electrical principles that are well established, one being that you have electrical charges that build up and flow back and forth between the Earth and the atmosphere. Now, that was established by Benjamin Franklin. Another one being that an electrical charge will more readily discharge from a point than from a flat surface. Now, you got a wheat field full of wheat stalks pointing straight up in the air, they're going to make for excellent discharge points. Whereas you go into a field and mash them all down flat, they're going to act as an insulator. So you're going to get an electrical charge that builds up both in the atmosphere above and the ground below.
Yeah, no, I like that. That's good. That's good thinking. That's exactly, that makes a lot of sense.
But that would seem to take it out of the realm of anything supernatural, wouldn't it?
Well, no, the fact that we're getting a static charge doesn't mean that's all that's going on there. I don't want to suggest that. It's just one of the parameters you can look at. I mean, I really suspect that it's a lot of things going on simultaneously, and that's just simply one of the things that you can kind of measure pretty easily. But the fact that you can measure it easily doesn't mean that's the most important thing going on there.
Well, and we can just sit here and wonder what could possibly alter true north.
Right.
When being
right.
measured within a crop circle. All right, well, the phones are buzzing, and we'll get it all in if you can hang on for Dr. Simeon Rice in our last hour here, where your questions are going to drive this conversation on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. And Dr. Simeon Hine, whose work is available for you at coasttocoastam.com. Just click onto the link, and it'll take you to his website, and you can sign up there for his information and find out the latest, too, about some of his classes, which he teaches both here and in Japan on resonance viewing and on crop circles. Jeff is east of the Rockies with a question or a comment for Dr. Simeon Hine on Coast to Coast AM. Jeff?
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Yeah, my uncle was a shaman, a medicine man, and he was teaching me that you can make an energy field, actually, by making a spiral on the ground. You can either, you know, you could use wire or string or, you know, you could draw it if you want. And it makes a lot of sense. An electrical engine, actually, it's like a spiral of wire. Or if you take a few nails and wrap a bunch of wire around it and connect it to a battery, that will actually make a magnet. So actually with the spiral on the floor, like in a giant spiral, like, you know, 10 feet across or whatever, any size,
right,
you'd actually stand on it and you'll notice a difference, kind of like in the electrical wavelength. When you actually walk over it, you'll notice this. You could actually do this at home.
Notice a difference meaning what? It'll give you...
Like, kind of like an electrical charge. You can feel it through your body.
Right. Dr. Hine?
Yeah, well, you know, Ian, this Coast audience is so asks such great questions. I mean, honestly, I've done a lot of radio interviews, and these questions are really based on some sort of really good knowledge. I really appreciate these. And, spirals are very important. That's what we're learning from crop formations. They're always or often built around these spiral patterns. And a lot of us suspect, and you know, like you're saying, that it's literally the spiral pattern which may be funneling or channeling some sort of energy like you're suggesting in just a different way than we're used to seeing.
What about that as opposed to pyramids?
Well, again, we're dealing with a different type of geometry there. We often, in a crop formation, see the phi ratio as opposed in a pyramid where there's lots more of the ratio pi.
Right.
But these different sacred shapes are built on different geometries, and it's possible that people, you know, even thousands of years ago, knew more about that than we know now. You know, we may have forgotten a lot.
Right. So, Stonehenge or something.
Right, exactly. Right. I mean, we don't know how to build Stonehenge quite like that. I've heard that those stones are heavier than most modern construction equipment can even deal with. So, and certainly a lot of the precision to which the pyramids were built, I mean, it may be that we've devolved from several thousand years ago in some senses, and that they knew about mathematical proportions and ratios and sacred shapes, ways to tap into the energies of the earth and the universe in ways that we don't know about anymore. And we're relearning them again through these subtle energy sciences.
I could see that. I mean, you look at all of these boy bands having to lip sync. It's not one thing that there's all these boy bands, but they also have to lip sync.
Yeah, what is that?
Talk about devolution. You talk about going back.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Let's go to Mike, who's waiting for Dr. Simeon Hine. Mike?
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Okay. My question's kind of off the wall, but then again, so is this program, as you will. you ever read any of the Roger Zelazny sci-fi fantasy series, series of Amber?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, within that, the main character is walking pattern, and through this certain pattern, they're able to acquire magical powers and do dimensional travel. And it occurred to me that maybe if we find the right pattern in a crop circle, there's really it really is a doorway to the dimensions.
Yes, right.
And it's kind of I don't believe in coincidences, but so maybe, the subconscious mind of Roger Zelazny was onto something there.
You know, exactly. That's how it works. It spontaneously happens that people kind of understand these things. And the crop circles really do seem like some sort of interdimensional gateway to something else. It's like things come from the circles and things go out through the circles. It's like a doorway to some other dimension that we can't totally see, but we can get little hints that it's there.
But by drawing it ourselves, I think that's kind of the interesting thing, too, is that we have the power of being able to do that. It doesn't seem to make sense. It doesn't seem like this should be something that we'd be able to tap into. But that by getting a group of people together and creating a crop circle, you're suggesting that creates a door. And that's interesting, as opposed to there being some sort of pre-existing natural door somewhere that, you know, that we would just kind of trip over, that we can help create it.
Yeah, it's a fusion between the group energy of the people involved in making it and also in the environment in which they're working. And again, I think that people are capable of lots of things that no one ever told us we were capable of. I mean, I'm looking right in front of me right now at a spoon that I saw someone bend and twist into knots near Nagasaki, Japan, a man that had these telekinetic powers.
Right.
I mean, he could, and I mentioned this with Art the last time I was on the show, I mean, he could make my watch move around and spin just by touching it, a mechanical watch, and not just spin randomly. He could move it forward 1 minute, 5 minutes, exactly an hour. He could bend things like they were just liquid and give them to you, things he took out of your pockets.
Mm.
And he said that he wasn't born that way. It was just something he practiced every day. He used to make insects kind of just imagine he could change direction, which they were walking, just with his mind. And he realized he could, and he expanded it to bending spoons and, you know, just making things kind of bend just by looking at them. And, you know, we were talking before about the nature of intent and whether this is something you try to do or don't do. I'm not sure if you've ever been to a spoon bending party, Ian, or seen something like that, but I've been at some of these, at some of the remote viewing conferences that IRVA, the Remote Viewing Association, hosts once a year. And what we've always been told at these spoon bending parties is you put your intention on bending the spoon and then you let it go, and that's when it bends, is when you stop trying. So there's something paradoxical about these subtle energy processes. They seem to work the best when you release your effort. You have to put the intent there, and then something in your subconscious keeps working even though you're not consciously trying. So it's very paradoxical and different sort of learning experience than we're used to, that we've learned in grade school.
Very interesting. Yep. Well, let's go to Ryan on the first time caller line and then come back for the rest of the callers for Dr. Simeon Hine. Ryan.
Hey, how's it going?
You're on Coast to Coast AM.
Great. I asked a question for the doctor. If he's ever been capable of lucid dreaming, and if so, has he ever experimented with remote viewing in a lucid dream state?
Well, I have had experiences from time to time that seemed like lucid dreams, where I woke up inside a dream and was actually able to, you know, maybe realize I was dreaming, but I was still in the dream. It's really kind of a neat state. And, you know, the Toltecs from ancient Mexico talked about that a lot, about our ability to control our own dream as if life is a dream and you're kind of waking up in your own dream. But it hasn't been something that really has happened to me a lot. It's just something that I kind of experience now and then. But I think, it's certainly related to a lot of what we're talking about.
These subtle energy phenomena, all part of the work of Dr. Simeon Hine. We'll get your questions and your comments coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Since this is an international conversation, it's only fitting we should go to the international line, where Josh is waiting to talk with Dr. Simeon Hine on Coast to Coast AM about his work in resonance viewing and crop circles. Josh?
Good morning. Calling from Tel Aviv, Israel. Thank you, Ian and Dr. Hayim.
Manishma.
Thank you very much. Shalom. I was just curious. I was taken back by one phone call a little bit earlier. A man had made a good comment in asking, why wouldn't the government potentially, or somebody that could do remote viewing, maybe take down Osama bin Laden? And your answer fell a little bit short, in my opinion, for one reason. We have enough enemies, be it Zarqawi or a few others, that just to take down one, even Zarqawi, would do well enough if it was directly applicable. And so to say that it's not being done, or to imply that because we need enemies, is, I think, a bit inaccurate. And, I mean, I have some familiarity with the entire remote viewing program, going back to McConaughey and some of the other fellows involved. And there's never really been, as far as I know, any practical application. Can you tell me, doctor, has there ever been a practical application that you know of that was a dead bang hit usable?
Well, that's a fairly pointed question. Thank you, Josh. Doctor?
Thank you.
Where do you go with that?
Yeah, it's a good question. In the history of the military remote viewing program, there were a lot of cases where they had really direct hits, and, you know, it was a slam dunk. the best example of that that I know about. I've never worked with the government or the military. I've just worked with some of the people in that program. But there was the case when they found the Soviet bomber that went down in Africa. It went down in a brushy area or woody area. They couldn't see it from the satellite. They had a viewer come in. The person gave them the coordinates. They focused the satellite right there, and there it was. And they got the plane before the Soviets got to it. And so there are plenty of cases where there's absolutely no doubt that it worked very well. And that's just from the military program. We also know that the same agencies came back year after year to the viewing unit. So I don't think they would have done that if they weren't getting useful information. But on the civilian side of things, which I'm actually more familiar with, there are people that have actually used this with a technique called ARV, where you can do short-term predictions of things like commodities, futures. I know Russell Targ did that with his group and made various sums of money over time just to prove to people that it did work. And I know other viewers that have gotten about an 80% success rate. They weren't doing it to make money. It was more to show that this really does work. And, of course, money talks, so if you can use it to make money, it shows right. that it works. But, Ian, I want to say that I think the biggest use of viewing is to get to know yourself better. There are a lot of applications that people have developed for, you know, locating missing persons and playing sure. the stock market. I think the biggest use of it is to get to know yourself better and the hidden powers and abilities, you know, that you have. Now, as far as Osama bin Laden is concerned, I don't work for the government, and I haven't been contacted by the government. I'm not really qualified to answer why they haven't found them, but I don't think it shows that viewing doesn't work. I just think it shows we live in a very complicated world with different political agendas, and as we've seen in the past couple of weeks with different disasters, Katrina, for example, these agencies don't always cooperate with each other, right? So right. some of them may have the information. They may not be sharing it with the agency that needs to get it. We know in other cases where viewers have worked with police departments that the police department, the sheriff's department, was competing with the local police, was competing with the local FBI. That happened with the Hearst kidnapping back in right. the 70s, which that's the right group worked on. So it can get very complicated. It's not quite as straightforward, but I believe that viewing's worked. I've seen it work many times. I think it was really positive results for lots of people.
And I think Josh's point, just to flesh that out a little bit, it's interesting, though, too, that it doesn't seem to make sense that the government wouldn't do that to find Osama bin Laden, because there's always Zarqawi and there's always somebody else after that. And if they were able to bag these people one after another, that's when the approval ratings would go up. That's when they would be able to say, hey, follow us. Look what we got. Look what we can do. And well, it would seem like a kind of natural magic.
There's no doubt about that, but viewing is not 100% accurate, and it works best when you have other resources to use with it. You know what I'm saying? It needs other sort of information to go along to confirm whether the information is correct. So it's helpful, but by itself, it doesn't always necessarily produce 100% accurate results.
That and a couple of satellites, you think, would do the trick. But
that would help also, yeah.
Let's go to Vincent, who's on the wildcard line for our guest, Dr. Simeon Hine on Coast to Coast AM. Vincent?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, first I want to start off by saying I'm a firm believer in the testimony of Yeshua and the will of Yahweh. And I wanted to ask if you had come across the crop circle. It wasn't a crop circle. It was 8th century Masonic order writing. And it was, we are opposed to cunning and deceit.
Okay, ever heard
there
of that?
There was that circle that apparently someone decoded it. It had a binary code in it. And when they decoded it, it apparently had that message. But again, I don't want to, you know, burst anyone's bubbles here. I think it's perfectly capable for human circle makers to do something like that. Just, well, maybe perhaps for fun. I'm going beyond the other circles that are there to create a kind of inspiring feeling. They may put a message like that in there just to see if they can do it.
Yep. And again, it would seem to beg the question of, why not just put that in English? Why put it in a binary code?
Right.
But that's still very interesting. And Kevin on the wild card line for Dr. Simeon Hine on Coast to Coast AM. Kevin?
Nevin.
Nevin. I'll yes, take sir. Nevin. Go ahead, Nevin.
Yeah, nice talking to you. My question is, a few calls back, I heard you talk about dreams and being able to manipulate what's happening in the dreams.
Right.
And my son and I both are able to do this. My daughter's not. And my son and I both have, I guess you would call it premonitions or visions. Is that all related to this type of aspect of your crop circles and your other stuff you've been talking about earlier?
Well, yeah, the short answer is yes, because I believe that the same sort of spontaneous impulses that people get every day about intuitions about friends and relatives, and sometimes you get phone calls and you know who it is ahead of time, that sort of intuition, that is what remote viewing trains people to hone in on a little more. It's that same natural instinct we have to kind of care about our family and friends, and just kind of a knowing when something's going on and knowing this. You can hone that in and work with that to make it stronger. So I believe that, yeah, these kind of intuitive subconscious sort of abilities we have are all at some level interconnected. It's just the level that you want to work with it at.
We probably have time for just one last call for John, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello there. Yeah, I was just curious if you were familiar with a phenomenon in quantum physics known as the Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen effect.
Right, that's right, yeah.
It really demonstrates that in the actual physical world, things are really kind of connected in ways that are unexplainable. And it would make a very interesting reading. There's a book by Gary Zukav called The Dancing Wooly Master.
That's right, yeah.
And he goes into really excellent detail and does an excellent job of describing it in layman's terms. It's just absolutely fascinating. It really kind of lends a lot of credence to a lot of the things that other people might, you know, might otherwise find questionable, perhaps.
Right. I like that.
It's a great comment. It's a great comment because a lot of people believe this has to do with what quantum mechanics calls non-locality related to, you know, so-called Bell's theorem, that you
right.
can have these
exactly.
non-local connections. In fact, Ian, this is what you brought up at the very beginning of our interview, that things can be affected across distances and they don't decay with the distance because the particles are correlated through non-locality, and that's why you can have these non-local effects and interactions. So it definitely has a lot to do with quantum mechanics.
I also started at the beginning of the show talking a story that people can link up to at coasttocoastam.com about a woman who is a clairvoyant in Italy who found the body of a missing woman.
Yes, that's right.
By hearing her, seeing her at the bottom of this lake, Lake Como. And the police weren't looking there and the family wasn't looking there. And there had been a thought that she'd either run away to Spain or she had committed suicide. And yet she saw that there mm-hmm. with her clairvoyance. Talk in the minute we have left about the difference between clairvoyance and remote viewing.
Well, the only difference, it's minimal. The only difference is that remote viewing, most people, the way we think of it, it's a little more driven by a protocol and a method. Clairvoyance could be a little more spontaneous, like this woman, the experience she had. There was also cases like that in Seattle. You might remember it last year where a teenager drove over a cliff coming home from a party. And the search, 200 people were looking in the wrong place, and a neighbor had a dream where the teenager came to her in the dream and said, I'm over here, and the neighbor just went there by herself, and there was the car, and 8 days later, the girl was still alive, and they found her. So this does happen spontaneously, and again, it's the same sort of skill that really shows that it's real and useful, too.
Well, I certainly resonate with that story, and
yep.
I wish we could do that all the time with those people who are missing now in New Orleans or in the Gulf Coast area.
Absolutely.
And whatever work that Resonance viewers can do to help reunite families together, I hope that Resonant viewers and remote viewers will consider doing that.
It's a great idea. Yeah.
And thank you for your candor and your openness and taking all of these questions to, you know, even sometimes taking us in areas where neither of us could have predicted where we would have gone.
Thanks very much, Ian. Can I just give out the 800 number for the Opening Minds book if people don't have a connection to a computer?
Go ahead.
It's 800-247-6553.
Do that again.
800-247-6553 if you don't have a computer and want to get a copy of Opening Minds. And, Ian, thanks very much for the interview and the whole Coast audience. It was a great, a lot of great topics we covered.
Well, thank you so much, and enjoyed it, too. Looking forward to next week. And remember, Art Bell, Sunday night, coming back with the EVP story, should be great, on Coast to Coast AM, Deus Tiamat, and I do too.